This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Philip C. This is the Breakfast Grill. If you've ever registered a complaint, chances are the call center agent was using software to track, record, extract, and analyze your details. And it was very likely a company behind this could be Freshworks, one of the largest software as a solutions provider focusing in the customer engagement space. From a scrappy startup in Chennai, India, it has grown into a global tech business serving over 200,000 customers in 36 countries. Our guest today, Vinod Chandramouli, who is the head of ASEAN business at Freshworks, shares with us how they plan to expand into Southeast Asia. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Philip. It's a pleasure.
When your customers speak to you today, especially from Southeast Asia, what are they looking for? Cost savings, revenue generation, or a better customer experience?
I probably would say all of the above. And there is multiple reasons for it, depending on what part of the digital transformation journey they are in. Digital transformation in itself has become a new mantra post-2020 COVID world. But it has always been lingering with businesses who really care for their customers. And Southeast Asia, I've always felt, emphasized more on the experience they provide as a brand or as an organization to their customers, and they deeply care for it. Sometimes they don't really worry about the amount of money they spend. But then again, there are organizations which have to be lenient with their financial ecosystem, and they often look for an economical product, which is again a place where we seem to outshine some of our competition. And then the third one, obviously, is a lot of emphasis on user feedback, converting it into transformation within a brand as well. So there are brands out there who deeply listen to what the customers have to say, where the customers have to buy or talk, and then come back and tell us we want to solve for this. So I would say it's all of the above.
How big is the ASEAN business? How many customers do you have? How much revenue does it contribute to the overall group?
We've been growing tremendously in the ASEAN world. But, you know, I want to take a step back and talk a little bit about our overall growth. Given that we are not yet a public limited company, I obviously will have to rely on what was publicly available as information. We've been in the business of intelligent customer engagement software development for the last 11 years. And we cater to companies across the spectrum, all sizes and all verticals. And today we are proud to say that we are trusted by about 50,000 paying customers across the globe. And ASEAN as a business has been a prime focus for us. In fact, our first customer came out of Asia as a region, out of Australia. And we've given that we based out of India, the resonance of our brand has always been very eminent in place like Southeast Asia. And we have roughly about 500-600 customers here spread across multiple verticals. A lot of them are mid-market and enterprise companies. A lot of them are small and medium businesses as well. And you know, we have customers like Zalora, we have customers like Supara Group, Redmart, Barapido. These are some well-known names out of Southeast Asia, especially out of Malaysia, Singapore.
Go back to the bigger picture, which is the global number. I think 2020 was a landmark year for you guys. You hit USD 300 million sales. I believe that's an unprecedented number. How did you achieve that growth?
Yeah. We did cross 300 million in annual recurring revenue. It's an important metric for a lot of our SaaS companies to be looked at. We also grew our revenue by 40% year on year. And obviously, a pandemic as a situation is first a humanitarian crisis. So we want to acknowledge that we were at the right time, I would say, with the right product fitment, where we were able to penetrate into the digital transformation. But I don't think we could have predicted a lot of this at the beginning of 2020, and nobody could have predicted. While I think our quarter one was very strong, but especially in Southeast Asia, we started panicking right in November or December of 2019, when Southeast Asia became the first of a hub for COVID 2019. Q2 and Q3 was some of the toughest situations we've faced, because on one side we had companies like retail and e-commerce discovering digital transformation and discovering us in that journey. And we had customers in travel and hospitality walking away, unable to pay their monthly dues simply because they had no business and they had to shut down overnight. Now, the vantage point we are in the customer experience and the employee experience space, if one vertical goes down, another vertical picks up. So we had e-commerce, we had education picking up really well, fintech and consumer companies, all of these were aggressively looking to move online. Especially in Southeast Asia, a lot of companies came forward with interesting ideas and rediscovering themselves in the crisis. And I would say primary reason for our growth is the newer verticals, which seem to have come into the digital transformation journey. But we also had particularly, faces where it was crucial for us to reconsider. One of the big things we did is we said we will not leave any employee behind during the 2020 phase. And we kept our promise. We continue to put our heads down and focus on our growth and our roadmap and our customer conversation, which led, I would say, to pretty much our growth of 300 million.
But this is a very interesting observation that you see the shift in the sectoral move, right, from your classic travel hospitality to more e-commerce, which comes back to the original question that people are looking at this solution not only for an elevated experience, but for revenue generation or to access their customers and also potentially generate cost savings in this time of crisis for most of them.
Absolutely. Yes. I think the biggest driver is competition. And when I mean competition, it's not the next brand which is available. It's the number of brands available in a particular segment. So many brands can cater to a single particular request for a customer that your peer pressure oftentimes leads you to reconsider the transformation journey you are in. For example, we found out that a lot of companies in the e-commerce world, especially the small brick and mortar showrooms, had no clue how to look at digital transformation. Or the biggest myth in digital transformation is you've got to have a room full of servers, you've got to have a computer full of complex software for you to support your customers. But a simple WhatsApp for Business, a simple chat on a website in itself led to tremendous acceptance on the clients for our brands in itself, right? So I absolutely think a lot of the keeping up with the market drove a lot of our prospects and a lot of other prospects in our competitor world as well, drove them to look at digital transformation. Some of them were in the midst of digital transformation and accelerated their journey. And many of them were at the end of their digital transformation and sort of then went deeper in saying, what else could we do to enhance the experience, make the most out of the revenue we get as well.
And if we deep dive into Southeast Asia, now, we all know Southeast Asia is not a monolith. It's a diverse collection of different countries, multiple languages. What has been the strategy for Freshworks in growing Southeast Asia? Are there specific markets you're prioritizing?
Selling into this market for almost a decade now, I both understand the complexity and the challenge, which is what I think keeps somebody like me going, because it gives me that diverse set of use cases to solve for. But at the same time, I also feel ASEAN or Southeast Asia is also one single focus. If you were to look at the top of the iceberg and the bottom of the iceberg angle, right? So you have ASEAN, which is very different from the other markets, where there is a lot more, a lot of users are educated, a lot of users and purchasers are really into the idea. They read, they come online. Whenever they talk to me, any CIO or CTO has absolute interest in what they're trying to say. Not that the other regions don't, but they're not window shopping for most part. So which means that our business and our articulation and narrative has to really cater to this age, to the place where they are in digital transformation. So our primary focus has been Singapore up until 2019 or even 2018. And it was because it was easy for a company based out of India to come in, set up shop in Singapore and then resonate our brand. But very quickly, we found adoption in Malaysia, adoption in Philippines, adoption in Thailand. And we work very closely with partners. We work very closely on feet on the ground by meeting some of our customers and talking. Malaysia has been seeing tremendous growth for us in 2020. We have Zalora, like I mentioned, one of the large retailers utilizing us through their customer experience journey. We have Sapphire Group, Red Mart Limited, and all of them utilizing us either for their employee experience or customer experience. So either the internal engagement or the external engagement a brand could have. And we're also focusing on expanding more footprint here.
If we look at your ASEAN business, what's the ambition in 3 years, 5 years time? You said just now you're about 500, 600 clients. Last year, we're growing 40% year on year. Is the goal to double every year?
Yes. If I were to be a little more ambitious, maybe triple. Okay. But absolutely, I think double is a good place to be in. And there is necessary arguments for us to say why we want to double. In a place like ASEAN, we absolutely think that there is growth potential. Travel and hospitality has had a lull the last couple of quarters, but it will reinvent itself in the next couple of quarters, where they want to be looking at economical way of coming back alive. And we want to look at that surge and ride on that test.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Vinod Chandramouli, Head of ASEAN Business for Global Customer SaaS Provider Freshworks. Stay tuned as we dig deeper into their future plans. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. With us today is Vinod Chandramouli, Head of ASEAN Business for Freshworks, a global customer-focused SaaS firm. We had earlier talked about your plans in ASEAN, but in reality, you were a global company from day one. Was that intentional?
It was not. I think the advantage of being a cloud-based SaaS company is we go where the internet takes us. So by design, although we were an established firm both in the US and in India, that's where we started, because a product was put out there on the public internet, our first customer came searching for us after they went on Google and then they searched for customer experience and they signed up for our product. From there on out, I think both the combination of marketing and the right user experience we provide in our product enabled us to spread our wings across the globe.
When I look at your client portfolio, it is a diverse pool and you do have these landmark large businesses like GE and so on. But would it be fair to say for Freshworks, your strategy is to focus on SMEs?
It would be fair to say that our strategy is focused on SMEs along with the enterprise customers. And I'll tell you why. Obviously, we started when we looked at our product and when we looked at where the biggest need for us to reinvent customer experience. The surge of SMEs enabled us to relook at the economic value of a product, relook at the user experience of the product, and then sort of convert our thinking into where we could focus on. A similar analogy is WhatsApp. When you look at WhatsApp, the way they started off was a simple messaging platform for not even SMEs, but for you and I and for our parents and our relatives and stuff like that. the demand built a new paradigm shift in the way technology was being used, that WhatsApp now has WhatsApp for Business. They have WhatsApp enabled, and enterprises are looking at taking that into consideration. And I would say we were really at that phase. We started off building it for SMB because these challenges an SME brings is far more compared to an enterprise company, because an enterprise company, if you solve for one vertical, you could potentially solve for many within that vertical. But in the SME world, each use case is very different. They look for user experience. They look for the learning curve to be fairly simple, because they're moving away from either zero or to something which they're going to be spending more money on. So when you really think about that, and when we started looking at it, we quickly realized that the shift in thinking was more on the enterprise side, because the enterprise looked at, or mid-market companies looked at, the innovation coming from the world of SMB, and they said they wanted to get a stake in it. And that's how we started getting into a lot of mid-market and enterprise companies. But today I would say we're very equal. We have a fair share of large enterprises, both in this region, but also across the globe. But we also have a fair share of SMBs continue to look at us as well.
It's interesting that the journey of growth for you has been bottom up, where the small, medium enterprises are willing to take the punt and the enterprises then take a cue from those.
Exactly. Yeah, we were also, I wouldn't say we were really surprised, but it was a lesson, at least for somebody like me, who's always been selling in the enterprise world, to really see the SMB teams continuing to help us. And when I mean SMB team, I'm also talking about the customer base, continuing to help us drive the right roadmap. And we very strongly listen to them, and we deeply care for them as much as our enterprise business as well.
You know, early on, you had this insight that during the pandemic, a lot of things become interconnected, that when we talk about customers, we also have to talk about employees. Do you see your clients looking for solutions beyond just classic customer solutions?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We call ourselves an intelligent customer engagement platform company. And what that means is anything to do with the engagement a brand has, either external or internal. The external could either drive audience to the website or a digital asset, which is the marketing software, or could drive sales, which is our CRM, or could drive conversation post sales, which is our CX, or the customer experience suite of product. And within that, there's a ton of channels, as we call it, right? Your customers could talk to you in umpteen number of channels today, from the traditional email and telephone, or through WhatsApp and chat and messaging. And within messaging in itself, there are 100 different types. Then social media, which is a big thing again. And then the internal engagement, which is employees talking to your, to the brand for whatever reason. So this encompasses this whole engagement suite of platform, which is where most of our focus is, and which is where we want to be focusing on. So to answer your question, where we see a big shift again is on the customer experience side. A lot of companies are moving away from what I call the web 2.0 shift, which is having a website, having a digital asset, and directly moving from there to the new age messaging bots and chat bots and all of those. So they sort of bridge that gap with the new age technology companies like ours and our teams too.
How much integration work is being done now in integrating customer interfaces, supply chains, and employees? Are they all still quite silo with linkages? Or is there this plan to platform everything into something unified that's consistent across the board?
I would say it depends on the vertical we talk to. There are a lot of verticals where they've identified that the siloed systems are not the right way to look at it. I've gone on stage all through from 2015 through 2019 to really talk about why we shouldn't look at a siloed system within an organization. But I don't do a lot of that often, because that's now become a given thing. They've all identified that if you're siloed, then you're not going to do it, because pandemic has pushed it. when all of us went online, when all of us went remote, that's when the first issue cropped up, and then they realized that the marketing wasn't doing, or the IT wasn't doing, the business applications team wasn't providing the right information, supply chain on the warehouse wasn't ready. So I would say we've come across a new shift in thinking. And I think this shift has brought a lot of transformation journey by 2 years ahead. If people were thinking about putting this 5 years from now, they are now looking at it in the next year or two or whatever. So yeah, absolutely. I think the shift in thinking has happened, but there is still a lot of companies operating in siloed way. And we feel that that's a key opportunity for somebody like us, but also it's a challenge going forward for a lot of organizations as well, Flip.
What are your investment plans to realize that goal of integration and seamlessness? Will that investment be an internal investment, or will you be going out to acquire businesses or technologies to integrate later?
I think it's a combination of all. We are very well connected to what the market and the customers have to say. So what that means is we are really looking at where we want to invest, what products we want to invest in, what narrative we want to drive. So it's easy for the entire spectrum, because one of the challenges I would say we have is to cater to both the large markets of SMB, but small but large in terms of monetary value markets of mid-market and enterprise companies. So bridging both these gaps require enough understanding of both the market and customers. The first investment I would say we've already made is bringing some leadership into Southeast Asia, right? And leadership in the company across. We've hired a lot of our CXOs and our heads of department have all joined us from versatile backgrounds, trying to enable what we have and then take it on to the next level of journey. So that's a big investment we continue to make. We are making a lot of progress there. We made a lot of progress there as well. Externally, product launch, although has a base, has been set up, which is the CX and the EX, the customer experience and the employee experience, as we call it. We also look out for new technologies. We recently acquired Answer IQ, a bot company, which does a lot of automations and artificial intelligence around automations and providing insights into customers. We are integrating that into our platform and maybe pushing it back to our customers as a way of them using our platform as well.
That there is a lot of talk that Freshworks is contemplating an IPO. But from what I understand also from your last CEO conversation, you've actually not even completed your last round of funding. What is the intention of the IPO?
We are readying the company, I think, to take the advantage of variety of potential investment opportunities. And one of that, I believe, is entering the public market. For us, an investment, it strengthens our confidence, but is not necessarily required to have the run rate for the next couple of years. Yes, it's probably too early to give specifics on the timing and what we will pursue. But for us, an IPO is also just another avenue of investment we could get to strengthen our platform rather than looking at it as a big milestone we want to go.
On that note, today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Vinod Chandramouli, Head of ASEAN Business for Freshworks. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.